Greetings, thrill seekers, music lovers, and conversationalists all across the fruited plain. This episode of Keep On Grooving is done with half my brain tied behind my back, just to make it fair, with talent on loan from God. I hold here in my manos, little Spanish lingo there, in my hand, this week's episode, episode 12, The Experience Hendrix Era 2002 to 2009. Hope you enjoyed the little tribute to the Maha there on the anniversary of his passing, or at least you weren't offended. Before moving on to our next releases, it's a good time to mention Experience Hendrix not only addressed the music side of things, but they also got more video material back out in front of the public. They'd done Woodstock in 1999 and revisited it a few years later when more footage became available. In 2001, they released a DVD of the See My Music Talking film from 1968, which had Purple Haze and Wild Thing from Blackpool and the acoustic Hear My Train A-Comin' included within it. They also added as an extra a couple of songs from a kind of lackluster performance in Stockholm from 1969. In 2002, they released his two appearances on the Dick Cavett Show, one just before Woodstock and one right after. He did Hear My Train A-Comin' with the studio band the first time, and the Isabella Machine Gun medley with Billy, Mitch, and Juma for the second. So after trying back in the 90s to improve some earlier releases, Experience Hendrix went back to work, looking to improve several other live releases from back in the day. Again, they did okay, but took some odd roads to get there. Blue Wild Angel, live at the Isle of Wight. Once the box set was taken care of at the turn of the century, it was time to go back to getting new material out. The first release of the 2000s was finally a complete release of the Isle of Wight performance, warts and all. And I do mean all. As we know from In the West, the set starts out with the intro, God Save the Queen, and Sgt. Pepper's. But this time, instead of the fade-out, we get Spanish Castle Magic for the first time. Along the Watchtower was next, followed by Machine Gun. The soundtrack version back in 1973 was a little under 7 minutes, while the one from the 1991 album was a little over 12 minutes. This time, we get the whole thing. All 22 minutes, complete with interruptions over the wireless speakers from the security guards. No wonder why Jimmy lost his focus more than a few times. It ends with something Jimmy ended up doing a few times in 1970, an instrumental jam on the song by the British band Gunn called Race with the Devil. Not that Gene Vincent's song, as interesting as that might have been. Previously released material finishes up disc one. Loverman, Freedom, Red House, Dolly Dagger, and Midnight Lightning, Foxy Lady. Oops, nope, it's just Midnight Lightning. For some reason, they decided here would be a great point to split CDs. Now, to get Foxy Lady onto disc one would have filled it up almost 80 minutes. But if you move Midnight Lightning to disc two, you get two pretty balanced CDs of around an hour each. Why not do that? Disc two starts off with the loose, rambling Foxy Lady. I think only the Oakland version from the Dagger Records release and the New Year's Eve version from Band of Gypsies are longer. Message of Love and Hey Baby were next, though it appears Hey Baby has been edited slightly compared to the 1991 version, followed by a string of unreleased songs on a Hendrix record, Easy Rider, Hey Joe, and Purple Haze, though Purple Haze had appeared before on a compilation. Voodoo Child almost ends the set, but the song doesn't so much end as stops before Mitch starts his drum solo and In From the Storm commences. To the sound of Jimmy's drop guitar, the set ends. Now, the video version of this set went through a number of odd permutations. The first footage appeared in the Jimi Hendrix film in 1973. In 1990, to go along with the unreleased on Ryko, released on Polydor Isle of Wight album, Alan Douglas worked with filmmaker Murray Lerner, who'd filmed the entire festival, to create a new video. It basically followed the 1991 CD with a few differences here and there. It had the complete God Save the Queen, Sgt. Pepper's Spanish Castle Magic opening, but did not have Hey Baby. In 1997, Lerner was finally able to release his version of a film of the festival entitled Message to Love. In a little over 2 hours, he included performances by Jimmy, The Who, The Doors, 10 Years After, Jethro Tull, Joan Baez, Joni Mitchell, and Miles Davis, among others, including the debut performance of Emerson, Lake & Palmer. Thanks to Lerner, many of these bands were able to release complete Isle of Wight concert films of their own. Jimmy's film contained all the songs in the set with the exception of Midnight Lightning, Hey Baby, and Hey Joe. Most of these were towards the middle of the set. How were they able to get the first hour with almost no problem, then lost three songs in the second half? Well, that's the problem with film in those days. I remember when I was an NYU film student back in the early 2000s, I had to sit in the lobby of a Chase ATM in Times Square under my coat to change the film and the camera. So I know those difficulties firsthand. As I've mentioned earlier, Isle of Wight isn't among Jimmy's best performances, but it's one of those where we have the most documented in both sight and sound. And unfortunately, it turned out to be Jimmy's last performance in the UK, so it's historically significant. Live at Berkeley. I first had the chance to see Jimmy Plays Berkeley while visiting my cousin Jimmy down in Newark, Delaware. At that point in 1990, it wasn't very widely available, just a rental or expensive buy. I found an expensive one at a store down in the village just before that trip, which is why I jumped at the rental. That would change soon after, as the film would be released as a bargain VHS for less than 10 bucks. The availability of music from the Berkeley shows was hit or miss as well. In the West was out of print in the United States, so whatever Berkeley material we had was on those mid-80s Capitol releases and a couple of tracks from the soundtrack. Oddly, and annoyingly enough for us here in the States, the VHS re-release overseas contained a three-track CD sampler of first set songs: Red House, which was on the guitar CD back in 1989, Easy Rider from Band of Gypsies 2, and the exclusive to this disc, Freedom. Hey, why no love for the U.S., Alan? Some of the Berkeley material came out in, of all places, a compilation put together by Carlos Santana called Sacred Sources Volume 1. It had unreleased material from Jimmy, Marvin Gaye, John Coltrane, Bob Marley, and Stevie Ray Vaughan. The three Jimmy songs were Message of Love and Fire from the first set, and I Don't Live Today from the second set. Unfortunately, there was no Volume 2. Jump ahead 10 years to 2003, and experienced Hendrix decided to address the Berkeley Hall, just not as well as they could have. The film made its debut on DVD the same day the audio version came out. The CD contained just the second set, meaning Johnny B. Goode, Hear My Train A-Comin', and other set one jewels would remain scattered about. The second set started with Pass It On, the embryonic version of what will become Straight Ahead within a few weeks. The trio of Hey Baby, Loverman, and Stone Free are together for the first time, though only pieces of the first two appear in the movie, followed by Hey Joe from Concerts, I Don't Live Today from Sacred Sources, and Machine Gun from Johnny B. Goode. Pieces of those last two are also in film, Machine Gun being used for the obligatory protest montage. Unreleased versions of Foxy Lady, Star Spangled Banner, and Purple Haze are next, with the Voodoo Child Midnight Lightning medley closing out both the CD and the film. What would have been perfect was to have released a three CD set of both sets and the rehearsal, as well as a DVD of Jimmy Plays Berkeley. But as they say, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and it's certainly good. I'd still like to hear Eddie Kramer explain why he thought there wasn't enough good material from the Berkeley shows to put together a single album. Machine Gun and Voodoo Child from this album alone would have made a great side two. Noel Redding, The Experience Sessions. Noel unfortunately passed away in May of 2003. He'd been in the midst of a lawsuit against the estate looking for millions in lost earnings. A year later, the company released a collection of Noel's material as The Experience Sessions. Not sure if it was poor timing, a bit of remorse, who knows. It had Noel's two songs from the Experience albums, She's So Fine from Axis and Little Miss Strange from Electric Ladyland, as well as alternate takes for both. It also had the Paris live version of Red House with Noel on guitar, and the original recordings for two songs he did with his later band Fat Mattress, Walking Through the Garden and How Can I Live. From the February 1969 Olympic sessions, they include two takes of an instrumental called Noel's Tune. From the earlier December 1967 sessions, they included the debut of Dream, which had been on an acetate with another song from Noel called Dance. Yep, the one that became Easy Rider. And notice it's not here. Dream is the main significant addition to Jimmy's catalog from this record, with How Can I Live and Walking being minor additions. There's one other interesting song that starts off the album. When Olympic Studios was closing down in the mid-80s, they were getting rid of a load of tapes. Included in them were a lot of things from Jimmy. Chaz Chandler was able to get a hold of them. He said that they were never in danger. Got Noel and Mitch together, and they did their own version of Alan Douglas. They went back and recorded new bass and drum parts in place of old ones, or ones that weren't there in the first place. One song was called Little One, from around the same time as Crosstown Traffic, Dream, and Dance were recorded. It had guest Dave Mason from Traffic sitting in on sitar, the same instrument he used on Traffic's hit at the same time, Hole in My Shoe. In 1987 and 1988, Chaz, Noel, and Mitch put new bass and drums behind Jimmy's guitar and Dave's sitar. Noel came up with some lyrics and put down some vocals, and voila! The song There Ain't Nothing Wrong With That was born. On some level, it's pushing the ethical boundaries here, but I have to say, they came up with a really good song. Live at Monterey. Uncharacteristically, there was not another official release on MCA for four whole years, only the Dagger releases, two of which I'd argue probably could have been on MCA. When they returned, they came back with one of the crown jewels of the catalog redone for a new generation. There were the not-so-subtle hints of new mixes for Like a Rolling Stone, Rock Me Baby, and Wild Thing turning up on the box set and Voodoo Child that a newly remixed version of the Monterey set would be showing up eventually. It finally arrived in late 2007, a few months late for the 40th anniversary of the festival. I have to admit, I still haven't gone back and listened to the differences between the 1986 version and the 2007 one, let alone the one from the Monterey box set that had just about the whole festival, including Jimmy's set on it. The wiki page says the 2007 release has less dynamic range. Okay, as usual, with anything with Wikipedia, take it with a grain of salt. What was definitely different was the new video presentation of the set. The original Jimmy Plays Monterey was given high-class treatment when it was included in the Criterion Collection's Complete Monterey Pop Festival DVD set and later Blu-ray upgrade in 2017. So if you love that film, it's not going anywhere. It's still there and in beautiful, pristine form. But like Woodstock and Isle of Wight, and another festival to follow later, experienced Hendrix wanted to have a new take on the material, or cynically make a version for their own coffers. The video was officially titled American Landing, The Jimi Hendrix Experience Live at Monterey. It had a separate mini documentary on the festival, as well as a 20-minute segment on Jimmy's involvement in getting invited and how he fit in with the crowd. I believe his friendship with Stephen Stills began here, as did one with Peter Tork that may have helped lead to the ill-fated opening slot on the Monkees tour later that summer. As for the performance, it was presented in a more straightforward fashion than the earlier film, namely it put Purple Haze back in its proper place with other footage covering what wasn't filmed originally. Nothing they could do about Can You See Me except do a whole 3 minutes of B-roll coverage, so I think they did it in the closing credits. Otherwise, there may have been a few alternate shot used here and there, but such iconic moments at the end of Wild Thing, like the girl that's like in shock, the other one mouthing, oh my God, and the person slamming the tambourine, they're all still there. So in 10 years, five of the major performances of Jimmy's career had been covered both on video and audio: Monterey, Woodstock, Band of Gypsies, Berkeley, and Isle of Wight. There were still more major combinations needed to address in updated fashion, such events as Atlanta Pop, the Rainbow Bridge concerts, and the ever-elusive Royal Albert Hall. Little did we know at the time that this would be the last official Hendrix release MCA would put out. In 2009, Experience Hendrix negotiated a deal moving the catalog over to Sony beginning in 2010. MCA's tenure started off on the wrong foot, in my opinion, though really no fault of their own. They were just picking up a new catalog. But once the family took over, they put out a lot of good material and must have been helpful, allowing so much more material to come out on the Dagger label. I mentioned earlier that I think it's a shame they weren't able to utilize Bill Levinson to a greater degree than they did. It's a bit ironic that right after the Sony takeover, that label put out not one, but two box sets almost immediately, while MCA only got the one. But in retrospect, it was a good era for Jimmy's music. And going forward, things would get better. And in some cases, maybe not. Next time, the Sony era begins with a bang, with a new album, a box set, and a return to the top five on the album charts. That's next time on Keep On Groovin'. Please remember to hit the subscribe button. I'm John Hartrock. Thanks for listening.